I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. Thank you to all our listeners. It's a delight. It's a delight that you're there, and it's a privilege to podcast for you. And I hope very much that you all have a wonderful festive season.
Me too.
Wonderful Christmassy time.
Are you looking forward to it?
Well, in a way, but I never make an awful lot of Christmas. Yes, in a way.
What are you guys going to do this year? Go to the Indian restaurant?
No, we've been invited out.
Have you?
Mm, both Christmas Day and Boxing Day.
Geoffrey.
Mm. So we go out to...
Social calendar tick, plus don't have to make the lunch.
Yes. And so we'll go out to Joe Allen for Christmas Eve lunch.
Mm-hmm.
But the period in between, you know, the sort of the blank week, I'm quite looking forward to that, because then it'll get... Because we go into the theatre, we go into the West End... Immediately after the January bank holiday.
On the 4th?
Well, no, we open then, but we do the fit up on the, I think we fit up on the 2nd or the 3rd. The technical.
2nd is a Sunday.
Well, then we're in on the 3rd.
3rd's the Monday, that's bank holiday.
Yeah, well, we're in the theatre.
We're at work on the 4th.
Yeah, we're in the theatre, we do dress rehearsal on the afternoon of the 4th, and we open on the evening of the 4th.
And press night's when? 6th?
6th, yep.
Exciting. West End run, Geoffrey Wansell in the West End. No biggie.
I'm so sorry, I don't mean...
It's just it is pretty funny.
Yeah, I pinch myself most of the time.
I mean, obviously I'm hugely proud of you, but it is funny.
It is funny. Even Betsy's wagging her tail. She thinks it's hilarious.
Betsy's got up to say hi to everyone.
Hmm. Ah.
She's Betsy. Too old to jump up now. Old lady.
Oh. You're wonderful, Betsy.
Bless her.
You're wonderful. The best possible assistant.
Toothless wonder.
She's had a few teeth out, hasn't she?
Doo-hoo. Yes. Don't do that, please. Can you go in your bed? She's not listening to me, unsurprisingly. No change there.
No change there. Well, what have you been doing this week, Mo? What have you been up to?
What have I done this week? I had some days off, and I had dinner with my neighbour, and I've done other... Oh, I went to see The Lion King.
Did you, by Jove?
Yeah. My friend Kelly really likes The Lion King films, and so for her birthday present, which was actually in August, my friend Fran and I bought her tickets to The Lion King show. I will tell you that it was not for me.
No.
I love Disney. I love Disney. And in fact, I'm going to Frozen, the musical, today, which Geoffrey was meant to come with me, but he can't because he needs to protect himself from the vid. But I don't like The Lion King. I only watched it once. I remember it vividly. We were in Salisbury. We went on Fami. The other time we went on Fami to watch... Disney there, we went to Aladdin. Was that Salisbury or Pool? I can't remember. Anyway, I think we went with the Harrisons for one of those trips. Anyway, I went to see The Lion King, and I'm not plot spoiling, but obviously the dad dies in like the first 20 minutes, and I was just like, I'm not having it. I was like, it's too sad. It's too sad. And yep. So I never watched it again.
Okay.
So it doesn't really have the same resonance for me. And there were moments in this musical. I mean, I think there's a struggle, isn't there, when a show has been running for like, I think it's been on nearly 20 years.
Yes, nearly. It's like Phantom.
Yeah. So the problem is that it's probably quite hard to cast it.
Get the energy up too.
They were enthusiastic for sure. But the boy playing young Simba, I mean, he could not act like at all, really. Like, to the point where I was a bit like, I found it a bit difficult to watch.
Dear.
And then there were moments in the actual thing itself, and because I have no recollection of tying it with the film, there were bits that were just like so wild. I was like, what's happening? But I did really like all the puppets and yes. stuff. That bit was good.
Yeah, the puppetry.
They do all the big puppets, and there's a big elephant that comes in, and like,
yeah.
you know, there's lots of people on stilts playing giraffes. All that stuff I was well into.
Yeah, yeah.
But the rest of it I could...
Yeah,
the, and the, actually, there's this big bit. There's this big wildebeest stampede when the dad dies and gets pushed off the cliff by his brother Jeremy Irons. That was really amazing. Like all the way that they staged all that was really cool.
Yeah, it won a lot of awards on Broadway.
I can imagine
when it first opened.
When it first opened, it would have just been mind blowing.
Yeah.
I can imagine it just because the world's moved on so much since then, even though it's still very beautiful, I can imagine at the time, if I had liked the film, I would have just been like, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Yeah. And so I think it has a lot of resonance for people because it has that emotional attachment.
Yes, yes.
But I just don't have that.
No.
Because
I should be very interested to see what you think about Frozen.
Well, I tell you something. I went yesterday, my colleague took me for afternoon tea, which is something that she really enjoys, which is very nice of her, to the Theatre Royal.
Yeah.
To Drury Lane, where I should be going this evening, which apparently Sir Andrew, has spent £69 million doing up during COVID. It is insane in there. It is like, and he's like added this whole restaurant in a garden around one side that's open the whole time, and then a bar inside where you can go and have a drink, and then they've opened the saloon to have these teas. And it is the most palatial theatre. I mean, it's extraordinary in there.
Yes, Lord Lloyd Webber, but did indeed spend the best part of $70 million.
So I reckon it's going to be comfy, but it's going to be full of very small girls dressed in Elsa dresses.
Yes.
But they do have a 6+ age limit.
Do they?
Or maybe it's 4+.
6+, probably.
No babes in arms.
No.
That's
apart from the mothers.
I'm going to be a bit drunk, so I'm not going to mind any of that.
Okay.
Just to be honest, I don't think I could get through it otherwise.
I've
only seen the film once, but apparently all the staging and stuff, again, is really amazing.
Yes,
I'm the lady playing Elsa is called Samantha Box, and she's a bit of a thing.
Okay.
So I'm excited. I think it will be fun.
Well, that's good. Well, darling, actually, there's an interesting link into the story we're going to do today.
You sound like a professional radio host. Link away.
Yeah, because the girl who was killed in this particularly sad story, which happened not at all long ago, was, I'm afraid, rather the worse for wear when she fell into the hands of...
I shall be careful, don't worry.
The killer. So this is called The Murder of Libby Squire. On the evening of January the 31st, 2019, Libby Squire, who at that point was a student in Hull, left her house with some fellow students for a night out. They arrive at about 11:20 that evening at the Welly nightclub, where the bouncers suggest to her that she's rather too tired and emotional to be allowed entry. In other words, that she was drunk then. Her friends put her into a taxi at 11:30 that night. But she doesn't go into her house in Wellesley Avenue. It's difficult to understand exactly why she doesn't, but what she does was sort of wander. I've looked at the CCTV. She sort of wanders a bit dazedly. And she encounters all kinds of people. Two men try to help her as she's lying in the snow. She's fallen down in the snow. Libby Squire is lying in the snow. Two men try and help her. One or two others come by. And in the next 8 or 10 minutes, she's obviously disoriented. I can see what's happening in her mind. She's disoriented. She doesn't quite remember where her house is, and she's wandering about slightly. But then she has the misfortune, in just before midnight, to come across a man without the best intentions. He's called Pavel Relovich, and he's a Pole. So let's go back a bit. I'll tell you what happens. I'm not trying to spoil the story, but let's just reel back a bit. Libby Squire is the daughter of a nurse, lives in High Wycombe. She's a nice, upright, cheerful girl. She's had one or two problems during her teenage years, but she's got over them. I think the judge finally at the trial said she turned the corner, and I think that was a perfectly right way of putting it. She was 21. She knew what she was doing. But she has a misfortune, and that misfortune befalls her on the very last moments of January the 31st, 2019, and the first moments of February the 1st, 2019. She makes the mistake, and it can only be described as that, of getting into a car. In fact, it was a Vauxhall Astra, which is, again, very evident on the CCTV, and being driven off. I think she probably thought that this man was going to take her home. You know, she thought the best. And she was perhaps a tiny bit naive. She'd had a gap year in Paris, though. She wasn't 16. You know, she was 21. She'd been around. She'd worked in a coffee shop in High Wycombe. She had a younger sister. She was open-faced, charming. Relovich doesn't take her home. He takes her to a nearby playing field called Oak Road in Hull. And in just after quarter past, or just before quarter past midnight, 12:14 a.m., a man living in a house at the entrance to the playing fields wakes up and hears a woman screaming. CCTV reveals that Relovich's car lights flash as he gets back into it at 12:19, and at 12:23 he goes home, only to go out again at 2:22, arriving back at the Oak Road playing fields at 2:25, where he stays for a little over 4 minutes. At 2:45 that morning, the police are alerted by Libby's friends that she hasn't got home, and that they're concerned about her. At 2:50, Relovich arrives in Alexandra Road, which is where he lives. It subsequently emerges that no one knows what's happened to Libby Squire. What actually happened was that Relovich, either at the first time in Oak Road playing fields or the second time, had put her in the River Hull, which flowed past the playing fields. There's been a lot of speculation about whether she was alive or dead. It doesn't hurt. Both are horrific. If she was alive, it's even more horrific, but it's horrific either way. But Libby's body is not recovered for 7 weeks. It's eventually found in the Humber estuary.
That's so awful.
There were nationwide appeals. Libby's parents appealed. 200 students and staff from the University of Hull gathered to show support for Libby and, you know, where is she, what's happened to her.
When was this?
February 2019. Now two parts of the story cross over. Relovich, a Pole, about whom I shall now give you a bit of background, has got what you might describe as form. He is a sexual predator. He was born in a small town in northern Poland between Warsaw and Gdansk, the second eldest of eight children. His father worked away a lot. He had once described by someone who knew him at the time as a sort of uncontrollable sexual desire. He went to catering college. His first girlfriend dumped him at 14 over his addiction to porn. He moved to the UK in 2012 at the age of 18 and got a job in Hull. He went to Hull because his sister, one of his sisters, had gone to live in Hull. And so there was some connection with the town. He went to work in a food processing plant. He was a butcher. He'd gone to catering college and he had some butchering skills. Steady employee. I mean, very well spoken. Absolutely, you know, if you asked anybody who worked with him, absolute perfect bloke, you know, no problem at all. In 2014, he met his wife Jagoda, spelt J-A-G-O-D-A, on a trip back to Poland. They come back to live in Hull, and their first child, a son, is born in July 2016. They married in June 2018, and the second son is born in October 2018, barely 3 months before the murder. So you now have a family man with an excellent work record, much liked by his workmates. But, and here comes the but, he was also a martial arts enthusiast, and he was certainly an abusive bully to his wife. I think she suffered the wrong end of his temper a good many times. He also had, it is an extraordinary litany, and I'm not going to go on and on and on and on about it, but in the period between, give or take, June 2017 and the murder of Libby Squire in February 2019, he has a string of voyeuristic offences. It's a litany. Committed near his home. They're all within a small, typical geographic area. It's not all over the place and all like North Yorkshire. It's all in a really close area around where Libby lived and where he lived. He likes leaving things behind. He's a night stalker, a prowler, who likes watching people through the window. He doesn't mind leaving fingerprints. He's got no criminal record. He likes to plan. He's watched a couple having sex through their window. He must have had to wait for ages. I mean, this is in June 2017. In December 2017, he adds a little burglary to his voyeurism. Particularly, he steals vibrators from a woman he's watched through the window. At one point, someone spots him and he gets chased and they get a photograph of him, but, you know, didn't amount to anything. Then Boxing Day 2018, he returns to the house he'd burgled on the 30th of June and looks through the letterbox. The girl in the house is dancing with her boyfriend, who spots him and recognises him. He's exposing himself. We're talking about all the way through 2019. He's exposing himself. He's puts hands through the letterboxes of houses. It's a positively awful litany of sexual offences. Again, burglary, but he likes sex toys again. As well as this time, he steals two laptops and a speaker. By day, this is an upstanding family man who likes fishing, going to the gym, playing football, and in using his metal detector on the beach. His other face, however, is much harsher, as his wife comes to recognise. He toured the streets as a sexual predator late at night. Now, his wife must have suspected something. There can be no doubt she must have. I mean, he goes out in the middle of the night, relentlessly. It's all the crimes, as I say, were committed in a very narrow area. And so, while the search for Libby Squire is going on, the police question Relevich about a whole series of sexual offences, voyeurism. In fact, he gives his first interview on the 6th of February, 2019. And he admits that he'd offered Miss Squire a lift home and had to stop his car at Oak Road, where the playing fields are, because she wanted to retch. Relevich has remained now under interrogation. The police get to the conclusion at the end of February 2019 that she must have come at harm. And on March the 20th, 7 weeks after she disappeared, a body is found in the Humber estuary near Grimsby Docks. And 21st of March, a post-mortem confirms that the body is that of Libby Squire. In August 2019, Relevich admits 4 counts of voyeurism, 2 counts of outraging public decency, and 3 counts of burglary when he appears at Sheffield Crown Court. He is sentenced to 8.5 years in jail, which was later reduced to 5 years and 8 months on appeal. But he is then, in October 2019, while in prison, he is arrested and charged with the rape and murder of Libby Squire.
Did he assault her in the car?
Beg your pardon?
Sorry, did he assault her in the car?
No. He then changed his story and said they'd had consensual sex when they got out of the car.
What, on the playing field?
Yes. And the last he'd seen her, she was perfectly all right.
She can't have suddenly become perfectly all right after being not all right, can she?
No. I agree. Make any sense at all. Relevich's wife, Jagoda, flees to Poland with her children after his arrest for the sex and burglary offences, but comes back to England to work. But she has now put Relevich behind her and is returned to Poland. Relevich's family in Poland insist that he's a good person. "We were raised to be good people," his sister says, the one he went to Hull to join. But, and his mother in Poland tells the authorities, "I know in my heart that Pavel did not do anything to this girl. He is a good boy who respects women and would not do anything to hurt anyone." In his defence, it's suggested, or it's the court are reminded, that Libby had a rather checkered history as a teenager. And she had difficulties, but she got over it.
Also, it's not a justification for anything.
No, I agree. It's a close family, and the mother is a very good, a truly good person. Her mum, who was obviously devastated by the disappearance and then acknowledged death of her daughter. She was, I think her mum described at one point, a girly girl with a wicked sense of humour who was terrified of water. I mean, she wouldn't have jumped into the River Hull, would she? Mm. Again, it's so easy, isn't it? We can complain so quickly. Relevich's DNA was in the database, but But at that point, they didn't have Libby's body. So, the DNA connection wasn't made immediately. So you've got these two sides. You've got the sex trial going on at the same time as the investigation of who really killed Libby Squire. And it's two things. They search Relevich's car, the Vauxhall Astra, and find a number of things which are, how can I put it, indicative of Relevich's appetites. You know, knickers he's stolen, all kinds of sex equipment, condoms, all manner of things. So a lot of which come from the burglaries. He is inevitably, therefore, a person of interest in the disappearance and murder of Libby Squire. But when she was recovered, there was evidence of Rilovich's DNA, but no conclusive proof of how she died. So the post-mortem suggests that she could have been strangled, but they're not certain. And they didn't know if she was alive when she was in the water, went first into the water. In January 2021, not long ago, Relevich's trial begins in Sheffield. As I said, he's changed his story now. So he says they had consensual sex, and he left didn't rape her, and he didn't kill her. Doesn't convince the jury of his innocence, and on the 11th of February he's found guilty of raping and murdering Libby Squire. He's already got one jail sentence and is now given an additional life sentence with a minimum of 17 years. Libby Squire's mum is a very active campaigner, and rightly so in my opinion, for the right of victims. Victims should be heard more of, which I think is utterly true in this case. Could anyone have predicted that Rilovich was likely to kill? Well, he was clearly escalating. His voyeurism was escalating all the way through 2018, 2019, from the first real offence in 2017.
Probably hated being pinned down by having a family also.
Probably. Again, it's very difficult to know for sure. His wife must have had some suspicions about him, all these continually going out at night. And
second child could have been a trigger.
Could have been. But that was only shortly before the murder. The first child was sometime before. Now, that could have been the trigger.
I know, but that's what I mean. I mean, just like actually when he'd got himself into the relationship and then she started having children and then they got married. They got married and had 18. A kid, didn't they, pretty soon before.
No, they had a child, married, child.
I know. But I mean, their marriage, second child was not, it was pretty close to the murder.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm not criticising anyone, the authorities. This is not one of those botched police investigations. In fact, rather the contrary. I think they did a very thorough, good job. It's just a tragic case. That's the difficulty, that Libby Squire was just a 21...
in the wrong place at the wrong
21-year-old girl in the wrong place at the wrong time. But she falls for a man who is, in many ways, a classic of what we do, classic of our podcasts.
She didn't fall for anyone. I doubt she even knew what was going on, probably.
She fell in the hands of, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Forgive me. No, there was no sense of any relationship whatever.
No, I mean, I doubt she even... Yeah, I mean, if she was, like, lying in the snow and people could actively see there was something wrong with her. It's a tricky one, that. Like, I've stopped to help people, like, very drunk people in the street before. You know, to try and, like, get them to where they need to be. But
It's difficult.
It's difficult because you can... You know, you... When they tell you I'm fine, or they're like, yeah, no, I'm getting on this bus or I'm getting in this cab... You're a bit like, okay, well, I don't know how much more.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a thing for us all to think about if we see someone in that way. Like, what can we do? Can we call? Can we try and get them to call someone on their phone or send a text?
I hate to say it, but the safest thing you can do is call the police.
Yeah.
if you find someone in that condition. But we've all helped. I've helped people, you know, fallen off the bus.
Yeah.
You know, they're so drunk. And sadly, it's often young women. The taxi drivers will tell you now that they won't take a single young woman in their cab anymore.
Mm.
Because they can't, especially if they've been drinking.
Yeah.
They tend to run off, or they tend to throw up.
Well, I mean,
then
we're making some big generalizations here, but yeah.
No,
I understand what you mean.
Yeah. I was talking to one only the other day. He said, look, if there's three girls getting the cab together, that's fine, because they'll look after each other. It's just if you get one, it gets...
Yeah, but in the same breath, we don't want to be turning down people that we should be...
saving.
Yeah.
Or potentially saving. Yeah. No, I agree. It's a very delicate and complicated issue. You could argue, and I know some people who know this case well do argue, that they rather, they felt that her friends had let her down.
Yeah.
When they put her in a cab, one of them should have gone with her.
I mean, they live with that for the rest of their lives. None of us need to say that, even if it's not the case, which isn't, because you aren't responsible for someone. They probably all will feel that for the rest of their lives.
Yes.
Anyway.
It is a life-changing
moment. I mean,
moment,
they'll never get over that.
No.
That is the optimum what-if situation where a tiny, tiny thing could have changed.
But we've done Christopher Halliwell, you know, the taxi drivers. Unfortunately...
I know, but in that situation, whoever those friends were who live with her, they'll never not feel responsible.
No, I completely agree. I completely agree with you. It's a human tragedy, but it's just such a moment of tragedy that these two people's paths should cross at that moment in the, you know, late at night on the 31st of January 2019.
Yeah,
and a young woman should lose her life.
Mm.
For me, it's a very, very sad case.
It's very sad. Well, there you go.
I'm afraid that's not the cheeriest of ends. We ought to try and...
The murder of Libby Squires. That was not cheery.
No. Because in a way, it's a modern morality tale, isn't it? You know, what do we do to protect young women?
Let's just all, like, really make an effort to look after each other.
Yeah. Well, that's fine, fine advice, and I absolutely agree with you.
That's all.
You know.
Just let's really look after each other. Let's not judge people. Let's do our best to help them.
Help them. But you have a lot of young women in your office and offices.
And are my friends, and I am a young woman.
You are.
I've been that person before.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's a very good case for us to do.
Mm.
What do you learn? I'm not sure.
I don't know. It's a tricky one, because when you are in it and when you're that age, you don't think it.
No, it can't happen to me.
Well, you just don't even think about it.
No.
So, you know. But, yeah, it's important to tell our friends and look after each other and raise our children to be aware. But then it brings you back to this whole, like, with the Sarah Everard stuff and stuff like that. And, you know, this thing of, like, you know, as a woman, don't walk home late at night. Make sure you always have your keys in your hand. Don't get drunk. Don't do this. Don't do that. Well, actually, if we were in a society where men were raised without this kind of assumption that violence towards women is appropriate or something that is, like, you know, that's the issue, we shouldn't even be having to say that to women. We should live in a world where, and it's always, oh, women, you change your behaviour. It's never, oh, men, you change your behaviours.
Perfectly fair
That's
point.
That's the issue.
Yes, perfectly.
So let's not just think about looking after each other, but let's also think about how we raise men.
Yes.
And what we teach them and the world that we bring them into, and we shake off the chains of patriarchy.
I'm not going to get into the chains of patriarchy argument, but it is worth saying that the Polish family were very supportive of Paweł Relewicz and kept on saying what a nice man he was. It's also true.
But it's not the family's fault. It's societal as
okay.
well.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we can't change society overnight.
No, we can't. But, you know, let's just be aware.
Let's just do that. All right, what have you got planned for this week?
Get off my soapbox.
Sorry, no, you're welcome.
You know, festive fun.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to see the Muppet Christmas Carol, which is meant to be a sing-along, but by the time we get there, probably they will have banned the singing.
Probably, yes.
Having some friends over for some Christmas drinks.
Good.
Yeah, you know, a few things.
Yes, well, I'm going to all kinds of other places before the West End.
Yeah, great.
And oh, I'm doing two more true crime documentaries.
Oh, yes, you are, that's true.
Yes. suddenly, true crime...
is back.
Is back. And the appetite, as we were saying not long ago, for true crime drama has not diminished either. It's a...
Well, thank you very much. Thank you to all the people that help us, our producer Sam Bray, my brother Dan who did the music, my friend George who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Jeffrey for doing all the hard work, and to you the listeners, thank you very much.
I couldn't agree more, Mo. Thank you too for thinking of this and keeping me up to the mark and never letting me get away with anything, which I think is an excellent quality. And I think the story of Libby Squire is a message to us all. I agree with everything that Molly said. Most of all, though, do be careful out there.